Hello and welcome to Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Oh, what's happening, Internet?
What's on fire this week, Mike?
First of all, actually, thank you for asking me that, because I was literally just about to say that I had casting news prepared. I had articles on upcoming movies all queued up. And then celebrities started saying so much stupid shit.
All the stupid shit.
That we can't avoid another deep dive episode. But before we torture ourselves for your information and entertainment again, of course, please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done it already. And really, if you have at least two of those things, you can do again. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your enemies about the show. Blast the show loudly to drive a drug lord who has barricaded themselves into their mansion insane. I don't care. If it gets us more exposure, I am for it. And also, please, the Coast Magazine's Best of Halifax campaign. I would love to be able to say that we have already been at least nominated for Best Podcast. And we just go to vote.thecoast.ca, log in, head on down to the Music and Culture category, scroll down to Best Podcast, write our name in, and then we can tell sponsors or potential sponsors that, like, we're award nominated, so they should give us money and ask us to sell things for them. And then if you stick with us and put up with our utter pandering for I think about an extra month or so, maybe we could already be award winning, and then everything I just said still happens, but more of it and even better.
Even better. I'll steal really pretty songs. I mean, like, you know, we certainly don't need it for that. Oh, no, maybe we'll actually get the rights to them.
or at least we'll be sponsored by a good copyright lawyer.
Yay! I mean... yes, we will take sponsorships from law firms. This episode is brought to you by Seymour and Butts. Attorneys at law.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was going to be either that or do we cheat him and how?
Oh, I love it.
The classics.
So, yeah, speaking of that fire, we didn't start it, but I sure as hell didn't do shit to put it out.
Needless to say, it is still burning as the world is turning.
That is round earth propaganda there. That is round earth propaganda. How dare.
Well, you know what else is round earth propaganda? All of science.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why you just got to throw that whole thing out.
And a tragically large amount of people already have. But to get into the actual meat of this episode and, again, our suffering. We, of course, are almost legally required to start with the news this week that acting legend, and I mean legend in the most sincere term possible.
Damn.
James Caan... star of The Godfather and Thief, which, from everything I've heard about Michael Mann's debut film, if you have not seen it, you should.
You really and should.
I'm actually planning to be shortly after we're done recording.
Oh, good.
Passed away at the age of 82.
Yeah, and it's... It's one of those ones where it's like, we got all the James Caan performances we needed from him. It's not like, oh, damn it, he had one more left him. I'm sure he had a couple of more performances in him. He was still acting, but it's like, it's James Caan has a wonderful filmography. He had a fantastic career, and he leaves behind just a brilliant body of work. And we got such incredible work from him, and it's, you know, it's so nice that he was acting for so long and is so goddamn good, or was so goddamn good. Like, sweet Jesus, all I can picture is Sonny Corleone. Like, I know, you know, Al Pacino obviously, you know, was the star of that, but fuck you. Sonny Corleone, bitches, get shit done.
Yeah, no, like, he, if you really, it's just such a legitimately fascinating resume, because he was, of course, known for mobster movies or tough guy movies.
And then
he did Elf.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, it works as playing against character, and he doesn't repeat playing against character too often. He doesn't, like, beat it to death like Robert De Niro did, to the point that when you eventually see The Irishman, it is kind of funny, even though he's trying to be serious, because at this point, old Robert De Niro is funny Robert De Niro. That's how you've gotten used to the character. And so it's like, ah... Once you go comedy, it's very hard to go back to serious. You can go from comedy to ultra tragedy serious. It's hard to do the opposite.
And yet, James Caan absolutely did do exactly that. Just like he was just going so back and forth that you name the genre, and James Caan probably showed up there somewhere. He did westerns starring with John Wayne and Robert Mitchum in El Dorado. Of course, he had his Emmy nominated performance in Brian's Song. He also showed up in Francis Ford Coppola's 1969 The Rain People, which is another football-based movie. And, of course, as I mentioned, Thief, The Gambler, Freebie and the Bean, Funny Lady with Barbara Streisand, which, again, James Caan and Barbara Streisand, like, this.
And Funny Lady. It's, yeah. No, yeah, it...
That's not a pairing you really see coming.
No. Although Babs did a lot of work with a lot of performers in the 60s and 70s, and, like, a lot of it is forgotten by most people, because, you know, anyway, it's not Funny Girl or any of her other classics, which I have completely spaced on the names of. Ha-ha! Sorry, Babs.
It's no use! Our firepower has no effect!
Then, of course, Honeymoon in Vegas, Bottle Rocket. He was Arnold Schwarzenegger's boss in Eraser.
Oh, yeah! There's a Schwarzenegger film that often gets forgotten. Like, Eraser is in the same vein as Sixth Day, I feel. The one in Hell, or where he fights the devil, where it's like lesser Schwarzenegger films that go far harder than they probably should have.
I think disagree with some of that comparison. I would say Eraser to me is, I think the best way I could put it is True Lies light.
Ooh. Oh God, that's it makes it feel sad. Like pathetic.
It's not well, I don't say that in a negative way. Like it's it's not quite on the level of True Lies. It's that less memorable, but when you do remember it,
yeah,
those memories are good memories.
It's okay. So the family tree is Schwarzenegger films. The branch is like the main arm of the branch is Total Recall.
Yeah.
Then you got True Lies as the second largest branch, and then a tiny little branch, a little bit up from True Recall's arm, is Eraser. Where it's like, you need the spy thriller approach of Total Recall. Okay, so you understand he's a spy? Great. Well, we're going up. True Lies. Okay, so you like True Lies, right? Well, what if we make it cheaper? Here you go.
Yeah, it's actually... No, I have a comparison that I want. If you were to describe Schwarzenegger's filmography in terms of Marvel movies...
Mm.
Eraser is Ant-Man. Okay. And it's that, yeah, like it's that midpoint. You enjoy it. It's nowhere near as good as the stuff up top.
Which
it's nowhere near as bad as the stuff down toward the bottom.
Yeah. To be very clear, the stuff on top, number one is obviously Terminator 2. We need to have the polar the poles like defined there. Terminator 2, and therefore, what are you considering his worst film? And you can't claim Hercules Goes to New York because that is too silly. At some point, we will review Hercules Goes to New York.
Oh yeah, I'd go for it. Yeah,
that's a terrible fucking film.
I think in terms of Schwarzenegger's worst film, like the bottom of that list, I think a lot of people would, I think the easiest choice would be something like, Batman and Robin.
Mm. I don't think that's true though. Like, not that people wouldn't say that. That it is his worst because around 9/11, he released a movie that has been completely forgotten. Let me look that up. 1 second.
While you're looking that up, I was just going to say that for me personally, instead of Batman and Robin, because I have trouble faulting Schwarzenegger there just because a lot of his lines as Mr. Freeze, it was... You didn't cast Schwarzenegger to be Mr. Freeze. You casted Schwarzenegger to be cliche 80s action Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. And it was Collateral Damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's probably at the very bottom. Either that or his more recent stuff, but, like, old man stuff. No, that doesn't count. Like,
no.
Him making his weird Republican movies, that doesn't count.
I would have probably actually said the one you mentioned earlier, where he fights the devil, End of Days.
End of Days. See, like, it's definitely not a Schwarzenegger film in any sense, except for the fact that Schwarzenegger stars in it, and that's why it probably doesn't work. But like, I kind of really like End of Days ish when you eventually actually figure out what the fuck it's supposed to be, and it figures out what the fuck it's supposed to be, and we all just move forward in understanding of what that is.
Oh yeah, no, I was just gonna say, like, you're obviously like free to still like it, but I'd also be able to say that there are a lot of choices, a lot of choices in that movie that are just wrong.
Yeah. It's like going back to the Conan the Destroyer and Red Sonja days. Just, oh no, don't do that. No, oh no. Oh, that was a bad choice. Oh.
Yeah. Also, with James Caan, where everybody else is focusing on his filmography and paying tribute to him that way. I did stumble across an article from people.com that I wanted to bring up, just because the headline that they used is, it sounds like the most James Caan tough guy headline you could possibly write.
Yeah.
James Caan once paused his Hollywood career to coach kids baseball after a bad bout with cocaine.
I gotta drop this coke. Give me some goddamn Little League. Hit the ball! Swing! This is much better than my coke addiction.
At one point in the article it says, Caan took a 5-year break from his tough guy movie career in the 80s after having made a name for himself with movies like El Dorado and The Godfather. Because of substance abuse issues, he opted to step back and work on himself. As he recalled to The Independent in 2021, he, quote, started doing cocaine, which is like a death sentence, and it lasted a while, end quote. During his hiatus, the actor coached his son's Little League team before returning for Godfather director Francis Ford Coppola's 1987 film, Gardens of Stone. And I'm sitting here going, that is so tough guy, but at the same time, so wholesome.
Yeah. But yeah, that's super wholesome. Finally, an end to parent on coach violence at Little League games. Because are you going to fucking pick an argument with James Caan? Do you want your face to go through a windshield?
Yeah, no, like, I mean...
Play my kid more. Your kid fucking sucks. Okay, thank you, James Caan.
Like, you remember that scene in Hobbs and Shaw where you see Hobbs coaching his daughter's soccer team?
Yeah. Yes.
I want to live in a world where that scene was inspired by this bit of James Caan trivia.
Yeah, I'm almost annoyed now that at no point did we get that, like, as just a random scene in a comedy of, like, I gotta go see my dad. He's coaching his Little League. And it's just, like, you only ever see James Caan, like, coaching Little League. And it's like, why is your dad always coaching Little League? Because this way he can raise a bunch of children who don't disappoint him. And, like, that be it or something. It's just, and like, have him always be just fucking super focused and pissed at the Little League game. I stand corrected. Resurrect James Caan so that we can get this scene of him coaching Little League. Damn it.
Oh yeah. Later on in the article, it refers to a 96 interview that Caan did with the Tampa Bay Times. Where he says, quote, I went through my period of drugs and all that stuff. There was a time when I was running bad. Where I come from, Queens, I'm supposed to be a tough guy, an athlete all my life. He added, quote, I frightened a lot of people off, understandably. I had some good friends, and after a couple of years, I went to this place, and, you know, so far it's been good. I don't miss it. I had a great time. I had great times as a Little League coach, he said at the time. People were talking about me quitting acting and they would say, what about your creative juices? Coaching is creative because you could take a kid who thought he wasn't any good and within 4 minutes change his mind, and I didn't have to wait 6 months for them to put music to it.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. We gotta find one of these children and ask them what a James Caan inspirational speech was like. Because he'd like, get down yes! there on one knee. And it's just like, now you listen up, slugger. You go. It's just, oh my. It would be like having fucking John Wayne be like, yeah, come on, Pilgrim. Fuck off. Yeah, that's incredible.
I'm sorry. How is this not a movie right here?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised. Like, surely there's got to be a script floating around of like a biopic of James Caan, and that's how it should be like approached narratively. Is just like it's not a full biopic. It's just about that time James Caan took off to teach Little League or to coach Little League.
Yeah, like it's that Zen. You find that retired tough guy who, usually in the movies, they go off to some distant temple on top of a mountain away from the world. James Caan went to a baseball diamond.
Well, you know what they say: if you build it, James Caan will come.
Oh, yes. And I think we also need to take a moment to thank James Caan, because after all the Ezra Miller stories we have had to put up with for the last few weeks, getting to bring this wonderful...
James Caan died so that we didn't have to talk about Ezra Miller. Oh, my God. Thank you for your sacrifice.
James Caan died to save all of us.
I mean, you know, his initials are JC. That silent silence you are hearing right now is Mike almost falling over backwards in his chair.
And before the more religious section of social media complains, for the record, we're going to hell. We already know. We're cool with it.
Like, I've got an internship I've got to get to there.
Again, time to get to the stupid.
Yay!
And when we talk getting to the stupid, obviously the first place we need to go is Twitter.
Of course, naturally.
And not just Twitter, but Twitter and the recent overturning of Roe v. Wade. Specifically, the reaction to the ruling and everything that's come from it from one Bette Midler, who is the start of this week's episode of "I don't think that was the take you thought it was."
No, it wasn't. Please stop trying to be relevant when you have new properties coming out, celebrities. It doesn't work. You don't know what real people are thinking of because you don't exist in the real fucking world.
Because, like, Bette Midler, seen as, or at least perceived as, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Ally to the queer community for literal decades.
Yeah. Decades. She started in a drag Hall, if I recall. Like her
yeah.
career began in queer theater.
And then after the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Now, with this tweet, keep in mind that I feel like the best way to describe Bette Midler in terms of her activism is feminist hothead.
Yes, but also centrist boomer.
That works too.
Yeah, so by the standards of the 60s and 70s, progressive. By the standards of it is currently 2022, not 1973, very regressive and sanctimonious and self-centered.
Which, actually, the last part of what you just said goes perfectly into why I said feminist hothead. Mm. Because I look at what she wrote, and it's like, I see what you want to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're trying.
Exactly. But, like, you have no contemporary context for it. And so you don't even know what you're saying that's wrong, frankly, it seems.
Yeah. And, like, also that, but also just, it's far more melodramatic than it needs to be.
Oh, yeah. No, it's now over the top.
Also, finally, before I read the first tweet, listeners, Crash used the phrase contemporary context. You're going to want to keep those two words in mind, because holy God, are they about to become very, very relevant.
Bleh. Proceed.
Tweet number one here reads, "Women of the World!" In all caps, so I almost picture her on a balcony, kind of Evita style, delivering this proclamation. "We are being stripped of our rights over our bodies, our lives, and even of our name. They don't call us women anymore. They call us birthing people or menstruators and even people with vaginas. Don't let them erase you. Every human on earth owes you." Now, having seen labels being used so often to demean groups of people or to make them, like, perceived as less than, like I said, I can see what she's trying for.
Oh, absolutely. If you have no understanding or context about the reality of, like, you know, transgender demographics, the trans experience, all of it, oh God damn it, like, it can be really exhausting. But
yeah, again, contemporary context.
Exactly.
Every label that she just used.
Yeah. It is clearly
contemporarily used to describe.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's turfy anti-trans bullshit against trans women. But of course, here is the actual contemporary context that is missing. None of that is about trans women. It never was. It's about trans men who still need some of the medical, like, resources that cis women need as well. And to be inclusive of them, and as well non-binary people who happen to have, like, the sexual characteristics of, like, a female, it's to be inclusive of everyone. Like, it's not taking anything away. It's recognizing that not only women have vaginas, not only men have penises. It's just this basic fact. And actually, that's how the Scientific American came out as it this week. They said, no, it's a fact. some people
yeah.
are transgender. That is just who they are. Their gender and sexuality and humanity is a spectrum, scientifically. That is scientifically proven. And if you cannot adapt your language to acknowledge that, after you've adapted your entire existence to every other scientific development, then you're doing so out of spite and regressiveness that you may not even be aware of, but you're doing it. And quite frankly, as someone who was a major fan of Bette Midler's work, it's not disappointment. It's betrayal, because it's not just like, oh, a tiny fuck up. She, in response to it, she claimed to have apologized and said, oh, I misunderstood.
Well, as much as I do, oh, I wanted to let you keep going. I was just going to say, just because I do have that tweet or that thread.
Yeah, so go into that, because it's like, oh no, you've doubled down, but I'm not too sure if she's going to go the whole full turf route, because she doesn't see what's happening or how she's being used or anything. She's fully separated even from them. She has no sweet fucking clue, and she's like, she's tweeting a lot of racist stuff too. And it's like, it's that lazy boomer racism where you don't even know that there's a problem. You think you're making a progressive point, but really you're just showing who you think is the other.
Yeah, and the tweet thread in response starts with, "People of the world!" Again, Evita, balcony. My tweet about women was a response to this fascinating and well-written piece in the New York Times on July 3rd. Now, I'm going to stop here to point out the obvious and say, well, maybe you should have mentioned that article the first time.
Yeah. And it wasn't well-written. It was turf garbage.
There was... to finish that first tweet, there was... no intention of anything exclusionary or transphobic in what I said. It wasn't about that. You may not have meant for it to be, however...
Yeah, if you're talking literally about the subject, and you refer to an article that literally is about that subject, and then go, oh, I'm not talking about that subject, I'm going to say, you're lying.
Midler goes on to say, it was about the same old shit women, all women, have been putting up with since the cavemen. Even then, men got top billing.
God.
But seriously, folks.
Damn it. Yeah, continue. No, please continue. It's just, fuck, that pisses me off.
But seriously, folks, if anyone who read that tweet thinks I have anything but love for any marginalized people, go to Wikipedia and type in my name. Wikipedia not exactly being a bastion of research.
Yeah, and I'm sure that her page got fucking bombed really quickly with a bunch of stuff that, like, you type in her name, it's gonna say some things. Nitwit, this isn't about trans women. It is about trans men. I'm sorry, they're putting them in the center of it. That's because trans men are a part of it. They're not in the center of it. They're a shared part of it. They're a very small percentage, demographically speaking. Think. If she's so connected to the community, why has no one come around and said, hey, stop. What you're doing is exactly wrong for this reason. I wonder who the fuck kind of people are around her, and in terms of contemporary queer people, how old are they? You know, how in touch are they with what's going on.
Well, I actually do have a thought about that, but I'm going to just read her last two tweets, and then don't let me forget to go right back to that.
Righto.
I've fought for marginalized people for as long as I can remember. Still, if you want to dismiss my 60 years of proven love and concern over a tweet that accidentally angered the very people I have always supported and adored, so be it. But the truth is, democracy is slipping through our fingers. I'm all in on trying to save democracy for all people. We must unite because, in case you haven't been paying attention, divided we will definitely fall. America's kind of like really, really divided right now, and that's not helping.
Yeah, stop being divisive, then. Mea culpa. I'm sorry, I completely misread and misinterpreted what was being said. I am now learning. Period. Don't tweet anything else for a while, then start promoting Hocus Pocus 2. That's it. I do not understand why some PR seems so fucking incompetent in the last 10 years or so. There are very obvious responses that would easily take advantage of the format and medium of the current automatic churn based off social media. And too few people understand it. She doesn't understand it. Half the celebrities in Hollywood don't understand it. The fucking cops don't understand it because they're their own worst enemies when it comes to optics, you know, here and everywhere else. Politicians are absolutely incompetent, and they're supposed to be the ones who are all about manipulating optics. Where the hell is the skill? Where's the talent in PR control? Yeah. Where is the person to say, I'm taking your phone away because you are damaging the brand? Where is the strong-willed agent?
Well, that's actually what I was wanting to come back to earlier, because, I mean, first of all, when she says, if you want to dismiss my 60 years of proven love and concern over a tweet that accidentally angered the very people that she supports, my immediate thought there specifically is, welcome to all of social media.
Yeah, and quite frankly, it's clear that you don't understand why. So you're doubling down on it, and it's like, okay. All right, well, see ya. You know, like,
yeah.
God damn it. I was really looking forward to Hocus Pocus 2, but... And, like, hey, who do you think a lot of the audience for Hocus Pocus content is? I bet it's queer people, because it's a very queer, positive film, as subtext. Who do you think isn't going to watch your movie when it comes on streaming nearly as much?
Yeah, and also, I think when you had questioned about like the lack of apology and where the people like explaining things to her, what I want to get back to is the idea that I think her people are probably a lot of the problem. Mm-hmm. Because I'm wondering if there's a lot of, instead of explaining things to her, it's more, okay, you don't apologize, because like there's that legal rule of, if you say you're sorry, you're responsible. And it's all about, like you said, you know, protecting her image, her career, protecting the Bette Midler brand. You can't have the celebrity take responsibility for something, because that hurts their image. Which, in moments like this, is right. Like 98% the problem.
Yeah, because if you don't put the fire out and you just start becoming committed to being a fireman, you're gonna do is keep trying to get like, okay, but where's more fire? Where's more fire? It's like, all you had to do was just deal with it immediately. Like, just stop, you know. But no, we gotta get momentum on this. And so She's embarrassed herself. I'm sure, once again, the great people doing PR at Disney are having a conniption fit over what a star said. But she's not the only one to have had a really stupid hot take about this.
No, and, well, our next bit isn't actually about this specifically, but I did also want to note, from a personal standpoint, as someone who initially read the tweet and was like, yeah, she fucked up, but she made a mistake and people are overreacting. But after this conversation, I'm very much going, no, they're not overreacting. So thank you for that.
No worries. I'll get you for this,
Midler! But now we're going to go to ET Canada and their article on the just-dropped Dave Chappelle's Netflix special. Where
I was just gonna complain about Macy Gray saying practically the same shit, and then Mia culping so hard that she got called a bullshit artist.
You know what? I myself have barely seen anything about that at all.
Okay, I'll be very brief. So she appeared on Piers Morgan. So mistake number one, you went on Piers Morgan. What the fuck are you doing? And he asked her, like, set her up possibly, but asked her about, like, the trans identity thing. And she went off on the same kind of turfy tangent. And then, like, when confronted online, instead of saying, like, you know, even saying, like, I'm sorry, that was taken out of context, she said, you're just angry, repeatedly, she said this to various people, you're just angry because that's the truth. The truth hurts or something. It's like, okay, you're being a bitch.
God.
It backfired on her horribly because she had an album coming out, I believe, and, like, it just dragged her name through the goddamn mud because black trans people don't fuck about. No. So... ooh, you're fucked. So she appeared on like Good Morning America or something like that and was like, I'm sorry, it was a misunderstanding, it was a mistake and all that. And like, I'm pretty sure it's just like, no, you doubled down on it pretty damn quick. We understand that now you're sorry about it because it's had a repercussion on your sales. But we know who you are now, don't we? So fuck off. Anyway, back to the original asshole.
Yeah, that sounds like where we talked about with Bette Midler, how her people weren't stepping in as they should have. With that Macy Gray apology, it sounds like her people did step in.
Yeah.
Way too late.
Way too late. Should have taken that phone away from her the second she was off that goddamn... One, should never have sent her on Piers Morgan. He's a right-wing idiot who is just going to, like, try to get a soundbite to upset people. He's also sexually aggressive to black women. So what the fuck are you doing exposing her to a potential predator? Bad.
Yeah, and also... This is the man who once referred to Daniel Craig as being less of a man for carrying his infant child around strapped to his chest in a carrier. So as a man who works in childcare, this is my very liable, very venomous fuck you, Piers Morgan.
Yeah, fuck you, you dingleberry.
And now that this is the take where that is going to start with me going, God damn it, and end with me going, fuck you, Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, as most Dave Chappelle stories do these days.
Now, this one, the thing that grabbed me was the headline here, which was... Dave Chappelle says students who slammed The Closer, his famous Netflix special that brought all of this into the spotlight are, quote, instruments of oppression in his new Netflix special. Now, I'm just going to give some very quick background because like 90% of this article is just Chappelle quotes. So we're pretty much going to be able to just go quote by quote and discuss everything. So Netflix dropped a surprise new release from Dave Chappelle Thursday night. The special, titled What's in a Name, focuses on Chappelle's recent speech at the Duke Ellington School of the Arts in Washington, D.C. So it's basically him discussing the Q&A session that he had with Duke Ellington students who were, shall we say, rather unimpressed with him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and there's a guy who is used to years and years and years of showing up on campuses and being just hailed and, you know, like, lauded, and, you know, he was beloved, and with good reason. His satire was brilliant back in the day, fucking 18 years ago. 18 years ago, almost an entire generation has passed since Dave Chappelle wrote a good joke.
Yeah, frankly, needless to say, I cannot and will not argue with that.
Mm-hmm.
So Chappelle said, according to Variety, quote, all the kids were screaming and yelling. I remember I said to the kids, I go, well, okay, well, what do you guys think I did wrong? And a line formed.
Good. Good for the kids. They have no fucking fear of you, you old bastard.
These kids said everything about gender and this and that and the other, but they didn't say anything about art. And I'm going to stop the quote right here just so I can say, well, Dave, have you thought about actually doing art for people to discuss?
Yeah, have you considered actually listening to what they're saying in response to your quote-unquote art? And yes, it is art. It's bad art. It's lazy art. It's sloppy art. It's old, tired, hackneyed art. But it is technically art. The same way that, like, you know, mass-produced knockoffs of Spider-Man with their eyes on their butts is art.
To continue his quote, he went on to say, and this is my biggest gripe with this whole controversy with The Closer, that you cannot report on an artist's work and remove artistic nuance from his words. It would be like if you were reading a newspaper and they say, man shot in the face by a 6-foot rabbit expected to survive. You'd be like, oh my God, and they never tell you it's a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Well, yeah, you have to read the article, dipshit.
Yep.
I mean, fuck, Dave, I thought you knew narrative structure better than that, than to write the answer to slap yourself in the face at the end. Like, seriously, that was just a badly written response. He should have known better. That's not clever at all. As from one person who talks way too much to another, Dave, that's really subpar, bud.
Yeah, like, I read that quote, and I'm sitting here going, in omitted detail in a hypothetical newspaper article is, okay, sure, bad journalism.
Oh, no, but omitted detail in a hypothetical headline. So he's admitting he doesn't read the articles. He did not listen to them. He just, all he saw was people disagreeing with him. He didn't listen to a single word they said. And he probably nodded along and pretended the entire time. But he has no respect for those kids, and he doesn't listen to people anymore. And that's the truth. Is he has positioned his ego as being the only thing that has any narrative validity.
Yeah, and like I'm sorry, but a badly written headline and a member of an oppressed minority going out of his way to actively oppress another minority, not comparable.
Also, and if I may say, as someone who, to be clear here, works in journalism, that's a great fucking headline. Because that will get everyone's attention and tells you what the fuck happened in as brief and efficient way as possible. That's a fantastic headline. The man doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
No, he really doesn't. And I think we're going to be going into that so hard with these next couple quotes.
Yay.
And I'm saying this just because this is the way that the article starts it. Mm-hmm. The comedian continues, quote, "When I heard those talking points coming out of these children's faces, that really sincerely hurt me. Because I know those kids didn't come up with those words. I've heard those words before. Gee, I can't imagine why."
So, yeah, thank you for validating my belief that he has no respect for anyone but himself.
Yeah. The more you say, "I can't say something," and in brackets, this is me going, no one has actually said that.
No one has said you can't say something. They're trying to explain why you shouldn't say something. No one is outright saying you can't. You have specials on Netflix.
Yeah.
They don't. I don't. Give me a special on Netflix so I can just spend 2 hours bitching about Dave Chappelle.
And he continues, "The more urgent it is for me to say it, and it has nothing to do with what you're saying I can't say, it has everything to do with my right, my freedom of artistic expression." Yeah, here's the thing where I'm going back to that old chestnut that apparently needs to be repeated over and over to get it through some really goddamn thick skulls. Freedom of expression, which is the one that we have here in Canada, not freedom of speech.
Yeah.
Is not freedom from consequences.
No, it's not. And whereas in Canada, as you say, we actually have like laws about that. So you can't just be like an overt dickhead. Now, it's not that he would be like arrested if he did a show here, of course. Like, no. You would have to be an aggressive, like, fucking neo-Nazi, literally printing material. That's the kind of people it gets used against.
Yeah.
But America is a capitalist market society. They, as consumers, are making a choice to, if they are choosing to engage with your art, they, as consumers, have the right to engage with it however the fuck they choose. And, you know, yes, sometimes that's asinine because audiences and consumers sometimes don't fucking think. That can be true. It's absolutely true. We just talked about it in another episode. But if everyone is, you know, calling you an asshole and everywhere you go, you know, like you get into a fight and people call you an asshole, you're probably the asshole. You need to stop and notice that they're making choices as consumers to, at the moment, counter you because they want you to learn. They don't want to have to abandon you. But they will. And this generation especially will. Holy shit, the Z kids are... Whew! They are salty.
Oh, a little bit, yeah. He continues by saying... That is valuable to me. That is not severed from me. It's worth protecting for me. And it's worth protecting for everyone who endeavors in our noble, noble professions. Dave, your profession of stand-up comedy is very noble. It is very necessary. Mm-hmm. You're damn insistent on not being noble.
Yeah, and as well... You are not anywhere near the bleeding edge of comedy. You are not on the forefront. You're not part of the vanguard. You're not part of even like rows 5 through 500. You are old. You're an old comedian. You're never going to produce content that has true relevance ever again because you don't have that perspective. You are too rich, too old, and too set in your ways. And the truth is, old comedy is very difficult because you have to maintain connections with youthful comedians. You have to be in actual clubs talking to the up-and-comers and retain that perspective. It can be done, but it is so difficult, and you have to always constantly, for decades, be open and willing to grow and learn from people who are, from your perspective, like your grandchildren's age. And that can be humbling, but
yeah,
that's how you actually do this right. You know, the hardest thing about existence is you have to always try to be the best, you know? If you think that you're the best, then you have to strive for that all the time. You don't get to fucking half-ass it at some point. Otherwise, you're not the best. And Dave, you're not the best.
I've done horrible things in my life. I used to be you. So full of hate. But listen, man, I poured alcohol down an alcoholic's throat. I covered a legendary wrestler in the ashes of his dead beloved manager. I mocked a wrestler's addiction until he lost his job because of it. And I'm here to tell you right now that all that hate, it's not just going to keep you warm. It's going to burn you up. I'd like to think that my respect isn't just given, it's earned. And right now, this is bigger than me. This is bigger than you. This is bigger than wrestling. This right here is about that 11-year-old kid who's at home watching right now, and he looks up to you the same way you looked up to me. That's what this is about.
I also, with a lot of what he said here, I did want to note that when I'm dealing with trolls on social media, just in general, I often talk about how familiar I am with the troll playbook, and the rule one, trolls will always try to make themselves look like the victim.
Yeah.
And that is so what he is doing in literally everything that I have read up to this point.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. He just, woe is me, 100% all the way down. Yes, let's be sad for the multimillionaire who has a Kennedy Center Award, lives in a palatial estate in a township in which he has aggressively argued against support and housing for the homeless in, because he'd rather there not be homeless there. Really getting to the streets, Dave. His co-creators on a bunch of his previous stuff have turned into rabid QAnon assholes. Fuck Dave Chappelle.
Chappelle concluded by saying, and these kids didn't understand that they were instruments of oppression, and I didn't get mad at them. They're kids. They're freshmen. They're not ready yet. They don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I'm sure
that's
that,
what made me want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I am sure that the millionaire standing on stage who got paid to perform and talk at a university, an Ivy League university, a black Ivy League university, is definitely the one who is oppressed there, and not the students of that university who, by the way, are either in debt paying for college, or like overachievers because you have to be to get the amount of bursaries and scholarships necessary to go to fucking any college in America at this point. And they've lined up and are all saying the same things because that's the moral position. And yes, I'm sure they're the oppressors.
Yeah, no, like, I couldn't As soon as I saw that Instrument of Oppression bit in that, just in the headline.
And you know what that is? Oh, no, finish your thought first. Sorry.
No, all I could think was to be an oppressor or an instrument of oppression, you have to have power.
Yeah.
Dave, those students who are trying to get an extremely important message through to you, they don't have power. A multi-million dollar stand-up comic with numerous specials, a show on Comedy Central, just all oodles of celebrity has power. Dave, that would be you.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that you are trying to other these kids, to make them less than, you're putting the spotlight on them. You're giving them power.
Yeah, you are giving them the platform to show the world how much of a dipshit you are. Congratulations. Again, why is everyone incompetent at PR? Fuck you, people are stupid. Like, the implication, there is no literal they in his what he said there, but there is an implied they. If they are tools of the oppressor, who is the oppressor? It's they, them. They're out to get you. And it's like, oh, okay, you have fallen into full asshole rhetoric.
And thank you for that perfect point, because what I had wanted to somehow bring up was, this is the same idea as saying BLM instead of Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. It's the same idea as saying Antifa instead of anti-fascist.
Yeah, it's reductive to the point that you are entirely erasing the message and just reacting to something that you can call a them, a the other team, the bad guys.
And unless you have anything else, the thing that I wanted to close with here is something that I've just been dying to get the opportunity to get off of my chest since the closer was dropped.
Yeah.
Which is that even taking out the blatant transphobia and all of the controversy that comes with that, just looking at what Chappelle has said, like, just as jokes with no context or anything, he's still a massive hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
Because with this whole controversy, I have kept flashing back to season 3 of Chappelle's show, and where there was, of course, that famous bit about him just spontaneously walking off and leaving the show and dropping his $50 million contract and literally going to Africa, where they said on the show, like, they showed the skit that made him want to quit. And it was essentially these Chappelle playing these little, for lack of a better term, stereotype fairies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were these little fairies that would just appear on his shoulder, and the stereotype was the joke. So the Latino, again, for lack of a better word, fairy, was literally like a matador. The black one, you can imagine what that was. I think there was a gay one. And it was such lazy comedy that he quit the show because he felt it was beneath him.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what he's doing with all of this right now.
Yep, he's become the thing that he hates, which is ultimately what every bigot and asshole is raging against themselves.
Yeah, and so, as I said, this segment was going to start with God damn it, and it was going to end with, for me, this giant fuck you, Dave Chappelle.
Fuck you, Dave Chappelle.
Boy, there are no children here at the 4-H Club either. Am I so out of touch? No, it's the children who are wrong.
Well, that was Jim Dandy fun. I'm only slightly depressed. Who's up for drinks? Drinks, 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 drinks. Join us for some drinks. Join us for some drinks. Like, share, subscribe, and contact us. Leave us some comments if you enjoyed it. Send us an email.
And you can send us an email at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. However, a quick note. None of the stuff that Crash said will be considered debatable, especially in the early part of the Bette Midler segment. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you're going to email, right, I'm going to tell you right now, just don't bother.
I will literally print it out and eat it. I'm that spiteful.
Now, we can also be reached via Twitter at RealGeeksHFX. And again, if you're going to try to argue any of the facts that we have brought up about the trans community and the trans experience, again, don't bother. It is not debatable. And speaking of not debatable, and because this was also the best segment that I could segue, rather, that I could come up with, also not debatable is how much you could really help us out by going to vote.thecoast.ca. God, that was so beautifully terrible.
Ah, that's wonderful. That's right up there with, like, how are you feeling? Oh, I've got a headache. You should take two of these. Advil, new, tiny, yellow. Well done. That wasn't at all obviously bearing leg on the street corner.
And if nothing else, even just in support of my attempting to navigate that minefield almost successfully.
Only blew up a little.
Vote.thecoast.ca. Again, just you sign in, you go to the music and culture category, scroll down to best podcast, and nominate us for that award. And if we get on the ballot, we can take that to sponsors, and we can promote things for them, and they give us money, and we're able to make this show better. And if you're willing to stick with our usually better than this pandering, maybe this podcast, in frankly what would probably be a record for a show like this that is switched to an audio format, we could actually win Halifax's Best Podcast and still do everything that I just said, but like more of it and better.
Mm-hmm. And if we win, we will give you an episode of your choosing based on essentially a King of the Rings style burn down via polls on Twitter until we find the quintessential terrible fucking movie.
If we win, we will do two of the worst things that you could possibly do on a podcast. Oh. Give control of the show to Twitter.
Ah.
And get really, really drunk.
This is not a cry for help. It is just this is not a cry for help. It is just content creation. I know sometimes they are the same thing.
This is both the standards we do not have and how willing we are to win.
So please, throw us a bone. Come on. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Were you chicken? All right. Fuck this. Good night, everybody.
Oh, good night.